You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Until 2010, it was illegal to keep bees in New York City, but in the last several years, the practice has become increasingly popular, with hives cropping up on rooftops and backyards and community gardens. And local honey has become a green market staple. Beekeeper James Fisher has been teaching a course every year for novice and experienced beekeepers, the absolutely free bee course, in which he explains the basics of beekeeping, including how to avoid the pests and diseases which have been plaguing bee colonies in recent years, and how to maintain a healthy hive. I'm delighted that James Fisher is able to join us today. Hello.
Hello.
First, maybe we should clarify that when we talk about beekeeping, aren't we just talking about honeybees?
Not necessarily. There's a number of people that keep solitary bees, especially in community gardens, where you just don't have the footprint for a beehive. You have too many people with rakes and hoes and children running around. The solitary bees tend to be stingless, which is a big advantage.
And where do they live?
A lot of them that we manage live in little cardboard tubes about the size of a McDonald's milkshake straw.
But they don't have the societal structure, do they, that we find with honeybees?
No, they are solitary. They're gregarious. They'll live together, but they are not a social structure at all. Bumblebees do have a social structure. They just have smaller colonies.
And they live in hives as well?
Yes.
Do they also produce honey?
No. Well, they do produce some, but it's really only for the consumption of their own brood, their own young. Mm-hmm. That you can harvest some of it, but you're really doing a disservice by raiding a bumblebee colony.
But you will see bumblebees in a garden along with the honeybees because they're also collecting nectar?
Yeah, all of the bees, the solitary bees, the bumblebees, the honeybees, they're all sharing the same resources. Matter of fact, an interesting thing, no matter what kind of a bee lands on a flower to collect the nectar and pollen, they all leave behind this international standard footprint pheromone, which tells the other bees this flower has already been foraged upon. So the other bees know not to waste their time on it. They can smell that pheromone from some number of inches away.
And they know that the nectar has been sucked out.
Yeah, at least for this round.
There are three kinds of honeybees, the queen, the worker bees, and the drones. How specific are their individual roles within the hive?
Oh, very, very specific. The drone is really a resource created by the hive in spring to mate with queens to produce more bees. The workers are the ones that do all the work, and the queen lays all the eggs.
And this is really a female-dominated society. The drones... It's interesting for men to be called, the males to be called the drones. And they have the lousiest job?
Speaking as a drone, I can agree. Yes, we do. And you know, the female society, you're married. Well, do I need to say more?
How many bees are there in a typical hive?
Max out about 70,000.
70,000?
70,000, yeah. Minimum during winter, maybe 20,000, 30,000.
How long does a honeybee live? Are they dying off in the winter? Is that why the population diminishes so much?
Well, there's two things going on. Bees are only produced in response to the bloom. The bees produce more bees when there's more work to do, more nectar to harvest, more pollen to harvest. In fall, the food resource ramps down, so the queen is slowed down in her laying by her so-called attendants, which are really her herders.
And so it's mostly the worker bees who stay with her through the winter. And then she creates more drones the next summer when they are needed.
Yeah, the drones are actually thrown out in the fall, and they die. So if they don't mate with the queen, with a queen, and die in the process of that, they are then summarily thrown out in the fall, and they die cold on the street.
So you die if you do, you die if you don't.
Either way.
When did humans first start keeping bees?
Well, I don't know when we first started keeping them. I know that there's some very early cave paintings where people are raiding colonies and at least doing honey hunting. Organized keeping of bees was probably the first time a tree got knocked over that had a colony of bees inside, and they said, gee, let's take this hunk of tree home with the bees inside.
For the honey. But when did do we know when humans started realizing that bees also serve an important function, pollination?
Pollinating's been done a long time. There was a bunch of very old scrolls, pre-biblical, where the beekeepers are demanding the return of their donkeys. They would move their hives by donkeys, and they're demanding the return of their donkeys so they can move the hives out of an area that's going to be burned, and they are reminding the local authority that if they don't have their hives, they won't be able to pay taxes to the king. So there's kind of an implied threat there. But the donkeys were taken from the beekeepers to help with building various public works projects.
The hives people use these days look more like chests of drawers than what we think of as a beehive shape. Why is a rectangular-shaped hive preferred?
It's more of a convenience of manufacturing. I mean, boards come straight, and making a square box, the bees are happy to adapt to a square box. Naturally, they would live in a tree cavity, which is a cylinder, but they're very adaptable creatures.
And it's known as the Langstroth hive?
Yeah, he was the fellow that came up with the concept, or first noticed the concept, of bee space, a space that a bee will not gum up with either comb or tree sap propolis, and therefore the movable frame hive, which you can disassemble and take apart and inspect without having to cut through comb and make a mess.
You can pull those frames out. And that's where the bees build the honeycomb?
Yeah, they build their comb in the frames, and you can remove the frames one at a time and look at both sides of the comb.
What does the inside of a hive look like? Is it completely filled with honeycomb?
Pretty much. If you can imagine a file cabinet full of Pendiflex file folders, each of those Pendiflex file folders is a comb.
And where do they raise their brood? In the middle of the honeycombs? Or do they have a separate area?
The general rule is that they will tend to raise their brood in the lower boxes and tend to store their honey in the higher boxes. So when it's time to harvest, you're taking the topmost box off, or maybe the topmost couple of boxes, and the brood they keep the brood in one area down the bottom.
My guest is beekeeper James Fisher. We're talking about beekeeping in the city. And have people always been keeping bees in the city except during the Giuliani era?
Pretty much. There was an actual beekeeping supply store here in Manhattan, which closed down during World War II. But until World War II, it was quite active.
Why was it banned by Mayor Giuliani? What were his reasons for making it illegal?
I have no idea. I couldn't possibly imagine. I know that at the same time, he also banned the keeping of ferrets. And there's that famous YouTube clip where he rails against the head of the Ferret Keepers Association. I cannot explain anything Mr. Giuliani did.
Did a campaign by beekeepers lead to its being legalized under Bloomberg?
Well, I'd like to say that it was beekeepers, but it was more the community gardeners. They are the existing political force, and they were the real movers and shakers.
We've been seeing more hives on the roofs of buildings in Brooklyn and Manhattan lately. When did that begin?
That began when Adrian Benepi said, "Gee, Jim, you can go ahead and teach your course at the Arsenal." And the understanding, of course, was that everyone would be keeping bees at their summer places outside of the city, because at that point it was still technically illegal. But it started pretty promptly.
And I'm assuming that most beekeeping was confined to neighborhoods where there were backyards, single-family homes, and, as you said, community gardens. Where do you keep your bees?
I keep them on the east side of Central Park, running up the 6th train from about 48th to 110th.
You keep them in the park?
No, on buildings adjacent to the park.
You have a whole bunch? What do you do, go up to the roofs of a whole bunch of different buildings?
Yes, one or two, three here or there. You don't want to have too many hives on one roof.
Do we know how many hives there are in the city today? How many beekeepers?
The health department should know how many beekeepers are keeping hives. The hive count is probably somewhere around 500.
Do beekeepers have to register their hives in the city and notify neighbors that they're keeping bees?
You don't have to notify your neighbors. You do have to notify the health department. They have a form. And they also want you to have a water supply for the bees.
Well, when people see a hive, they are often freaked out.
Yep.
Should they be?
No, not at all. There's a lady up in the mid-90s, up near Fifth Avenue, that is very concerned about bees that are visiting her rooftop garden. And
isn't that good for her garden?
One would think, but from her point of view, it has to stop, and it has to stop now. And there's angry emails going back and forth, and I have to go somehow placate this woman.
Aren't there restaurants and schools that are starting to keep beehives?
Yep, there's quite a few of them. There's a growing sort of a trend where schools are realizing that a beehive is kind of a science class in a box.
And then there's one on the top of the Whitney Museum. I don't know whether they're going to move it when they move the Whitney downtown to Chelsea.
Yeah, I don't know. I would assume that the hive is going to stay on the structure regardless of what's going on underneath. It's probably a good spot.
How does someone get started in beekeeping? Can I just order a hive from a beekeeping supplier and put it in my backyard or on my roof?
Yes, you could. With no training at all, you can just buy everything and they'll deliver it to you.
When you say everything, do I have to buy bees as well?
It's probably a good idea to start. I mean, you could capture a swarm, but you might have to wait for a while before one appeared that was convenient.
So you buy a queen and some worker bees.
Yep.
And then
exactly.
She'll supply the drones.
Well, they'll
but
make
you need
their
at least
drones.
One drone, don't you?
No, the queen's already mated when you buy bees. You don't need to worry about mating. And that's one of the things we've got here in the city is we're just starting to get the hive density where people are saying queens are naturally mating here in the city.
What other equipment would I need? Would I need to buy a bee suit or veils or a smoker, kind of protective equipment?
Yeah, at minimum, you would probably want to have a smoker and a veil. I recommend the least amount of protective gear so that you notice more what the bees are doing.
Now, what is the function of the smoker? Does it calm down the bees?
Yeah, the smoke blocks the bee's ability to smell alarm pheromone, which is a smell that a bee makes when it's tremendously upset or dying. And that alarm pheromone is what turns an otherwise placid hive of bees into a defensive hive of bees.
How do the bees turn nectar into honey?
Mostly evaporation. They.
So it's just a vegetable product?
Well, it's...
Because vegans won't eat it.
Well, that's their problem. I mean, if vegans won't eat it because bees make it, they have a problem with every vegetable because bees are pollinating them. I mean, what's their problem?
I think they feel you're stealing from the bees. Aren't you stealing from the bees?
No.
Aren't you going to make the bees starve because you're taking all their honey away from them?
Oh, I see. Now it's turning on me. Isn't it true? No, by managing the bees properly, by preserving their comb from year to year, by adding combs at the right time, you can get a hive that would normally produce no more than it needed to survive. And maybe in a bad winter like we had last winter, a very long cold winter, that hive would starve without the beekeeper because there's no way a hive could have gathered enough honey over a single season to survive the last winter. The last winter was very long. A beekeeper harvests some of the honey, but he also manages the bees to make sure that they have enough to survive on.
How long after I get a hive will I actually start seeing some product
probably,
or production?
Yeah, probably the second year. The first year the bees are drawing comb and gathering nectar and pollen and assuring their own survival over the first winter, which is the hard one, the big hump. A natural swarm, only about one-third of them survive their first year.
How do you decide where to put a hive? Can you put a hive on a roof that isn't near a park or a garden?
Well, there's a lot of street trees in New York, and those street trees are actually the main resource that bees are exploiting here in the city. The gardens are less of a deal for the bees than the street trees.
We are getting calls from listeners who have been inspired by this conversation. Our number here, by the way, is 212-433-9692. Bob from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a house in upstate New York. For the last 4 years, we have a large hive in a wall on the second floor. And I consulted someone, a beekeeper from Middle Village and upstate New York. I don't know if you know the fellow, former school teacher. But he said that we didn't have to remove it, and I went with that. However, I have a concern about how large the hive can get and whether they can take over the whole house. You know, we had a little bit of nectar flowing in on one floor. I just wiped it up. When the heat went on, it's near a chimney. But otherwise, we don't feel threatened by them, but I want to know if there's any downside to leaving them there.
You're shaking your head. What's the problem?
The bees probably will do just fine. However, if the bees through one process or another die out, if the pests and predators kill the hive, you now have a wall that contains maybe a couple of hundred pounds of honey and maybe 15 pounds of larva, brood, and you're now going to have the biggest mess in your life, because without the bees to maintain it all, that honey is going to get warm or get cold, and in freezing it will expand slightly and pop the wax caps, and now you have a mess, and you're going to have to tear out the wall and remove this horrible mess.
But he'll have a lot of honey.
Yeah, if he'll have a lot of honey if it doesn't turn into an unpalatable mess first.
Yeah, how long before it spoils?
Well, honey isn't going to spoil. It might ferment because it would get too moist, especially in a wall that's, you know, not a, honey doesn't make a good home insulation.
So what is he going to do right now? Pull down the wall?
Yeah. You get a beekeeper that has a Sawzall, and you either take out the inside wall or the outside wall. Most people do it from the inside. And pull out the combs and rubber band them and put them into frames and put them in a box, and now the bees can be all they can be.
How do you know if your bees are doing what they're supposed to be doing and if they're healthy?
Wow. Is it obvious
if there are problems in a hive?
That's a very long question. It used to be a very simple question. But with the invasive species we had coming in on all the uninspected freight containers and containerized ships, we now have large reference books, the 860-some-odd page Honeybee Pests, Predators, and Diseases. And that's one of the reasons why you have to have a beekeeping class now, is so that you can identify and diagnose all of these threats to bees.
We've been hearing a lot about CCD, or colony collapse disorder, in recent years. Some people blame the use of pesticides or genetically modified crops, but there aren't a lot of GMO crops grown in cities, and pesticide use tends to be minimal. So does CCD also affect urban bees?
CCD was a name that was created to come up for a combination of different factors, what is now acknowledged to be a combination of different problems, which we don't really use the term CCD anymore. Everyone's talking about specific problems of bees. For example, the pesticides were blamed by people who were already trying to raise money to fight pesticides for their own agenda. Bees and beekeepers were really just being exploited by these fundraising efforts, these awareness-raising efforts.
So you're saying the bees aren't affected by pesticides?
There is a minor effect. There's always an effect, but I don't think anybody in their right mind would want to go back to the days of organophosphates. The systemic pesticides we have now are far superior and far less toxic to both bees and humans. The fungicides...
You mean Roundup doesn't affect the bees? Because I've heard that it has a major impact.
Yeah, glyphosate, the Roundup herbicides, yes, it can affect bees. It can affect all living things because it can get into the groundwater, and it can pollute the groundwater. It can pollute the surface water. However, you could use a heck of a lot of Roundup and not have any effect on your beehive sitting right next to that field that you're treating with Roundup. The big problem, the one that we've noticed that's really a problem, is fungicides, believe it or not, because they are stopping the pollen that bees collect from fermenting into what we call bee bread that they feed to their brood.
What about just the carbon monoxide and other fumes that come from city living, cars? Does that affect the bees?
Well, the low sulfur diesel rules have certainly cleaned up the air. You get up at dawn, you can see the sunrise. There isn't that orange, rusty glow over Long Island anymore. Bees are little flying dust mops, and yes, they do collect things like that, but we have sent samples down to the USDA of honey and wax and bees and so on, and we've consistently come up zeros in all the toxins.
Every spring we see at least one news story about a swarm of bees, usually in a tree somewhere. Have those bees come from a hive?
Undoubtedly, yeah, indubitably. Undoubtedly.
So what happened?
The beekeeper failed to keep ahead of his hive. The bees got built up to the point where they had enough population to swarm, and they swarmed because swarming is how a beehive makes another beehive. It's the reproductive imperative.
Have you been involved in any bee rescues?
I've done a few. There's a couple of people that are much more gung-ho about that sort of thing. I've taken a back seat on that because it is difficult to be everywhere all the time. It's difficult to have, unless they're going to give you a fire truck and a siren.
But you've got to convince the bees to leave the tree and go into one of your hives.
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. Where the queen goes, the rest will follow.
So you got to bring the queen in, and then they will also follow.
Yeah.
Edmund from Manpack, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question for Mr. Fisher. You mentioned that the bees really start producing honey after during the second year. So if I was to buy an average beehive from a mail order company, what should I be expecting in terms of the average yield, in terms of cups of honey?
I like to say that if you're an absolute idiot, you can get 100 pounds of honey out of a hive. And if you're a genius, you can get 200.
So you're going to get about 200 pounds, Edmund.
Wow, that's a good return. I mean, you know, I'm always looking for something that, you know, that's a good way for to invest my money. But this is excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The qualification on that.
Yeah.
Yes, you can get 100 pounds of honey, but that's over that two-year period. And it is difficult for many people to keep those bees alive over that first year so that they can make a crop the second.
Because winter is so destructive. But you are mining, or whatever word you want to use, the honey in the early fall?
Here we have.
Or do you do it throughout the summer?
We have two harvests. We do one in late June, early July. We do another one in, well, probably mid-September this year, because we've had such a long, warm summer.
We are going to take one more call. Tom from Long Island, how are you on the air?
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for taking my call. I had bees for the first time this year. About 1 month in, they swarmed. My neighbors were not aware that the bees were there before a 30-foot-tall cloud of bees appeared above my house, at which point they were a little bit up in arms about the fact that I was keeping bees. So even though I kept them 10 feet from the fence and in the middle of the yard and far away from the neighbors, once they knew to look for them, they kind of pushed me to get rid of them, so I had to send them away. I wonder if that might be an issue also in the city, even more so. But even on Long Island, where I am, where it's fairly spacious, a hive of bees is really noticeable.
Now, the other side of this is I have a garden, and when I see bees, I say, oh, good. So were his neighbors overreacting?
Well, I wouldn't say they were reacting. I think they were having a normal reaction, given that bees have been so reduced in population that we've had a generation go through childhood and adulthood, and now they're raising their own kids, and they've never stepped on a bee. They've never been stung by a bee. Because there have been so few bees, because of the problems of bees, we've had people get to adulthood and see every bee as a life-threatening situation.
And people are allergic. Some people are allergic.
A tiny percentage of people that were dealt a very poor genetic hand and need to go get the John Hopkins treatment.
One more thing before you go. How can people get started learning about beekeeping? You mentioned books, but what about signing up for your course?
Oh, yeah. People could
do
that.
How do you do that?
We have a Facebook page. You can go there. We've got a little tab where you can click and get on the mailing list, and we'll send out an email and announce when it's going to start.
And we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Are there beekeepers who take on apprentices? Are there other ways of getting hands-on experience?
There's always. We have three training yards. We have a yard up on the Randall's Island on top of the fibro shops that the Adrian Benepe and the Parks Department were nice enough to let us use. We have another yard up Van Cortlandt Park, and we're putting in a third yard. We're going to try and put it on top of the Jacob Javits Center starting this coming spring. So we have training yards where people who do not want to own their own hives of bees can come and experience some hands-on.
Beekeeper James Fisher teaches a course called the Absolutely Free Bee Course. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.